welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Full disclosure, as this episode goes to air, I will be shooting my bow up at Heavenly for the Team Whiskey shoot. Hopefully everybody got registered for that. If you bump into me on the course, say hey. One David Catalano might actually make it out there. He is going to be flying back from Tennessee. And speaking of which, Dave is not here today. So I've got a special guest in studio, a repeat recycle retread guest. However, there was recently a big shotgun competition, so I might have a couple guests actually coming up. And before I forget, make sure you go sign up for Shooting Performance Institute's long range course. It's August 1st and 2nd. Do not forget to sign up for that, because as of now, you know whether or not you have a rifle tag this season. Tags came out on Friday. Congrats to all of you who drew. And like I said, if you did draw, I'm going to share a cautionary tale real quick. I had two friends. One of them killed a prostitute in a meth-fueled rage out near Ely. The other killed a 380 class bull after going to Shooting Performance Institute's intro to long range shooting course. So go sign up for that. Super affordable. August 1st and 2nd is the next one. Rick Carter.
Hello.
In studio. Special guest. Rick, you recently shot the, am I saying it? It's the state championship shoot for Nevada?
The Nevada State Championship.
Okay.
So that is the Sporting Clays equivalent of you'd bring in as many Northern Nevada, Southern Nevada, Middle Nevada shooters together in one place to have it out.
2 or 3 days of shooting?
4.
Oh!
So you could participate in side events, and you could participate in sub-gauge events early on in the shoot. After that, they have to pull those machines back and implement those in the main events.
I want to talk to you about that.
Sure.
So they did actually set different courses. In fact, another guest coming up on the show, Aaron Lamfonte, he shot the 410 course.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the first day, I think.
Thursday.
Did you do any of the, we'll call them side quests?
I don't shoot sub-gauge, and I love side events, but there are so many. I narrow mine down to what's called super sporting.
Okay.
Love the super sporting side event. And I shot that on a very blustery, very windy, very dark Thursday afternoon. And my scores reflected it.
Really?
Yes. If you shot that course in the morning when it was sunny and calm, boy, the scores were great. But I do love super sporting.
When you say your scores reflected that, what does that look like for a Rick Carter? Because I know you can shoot.
Super sporting score, I should have been right about 87, 90.
Okay.
And I'm going to say I shot a 72. It was tough.
Okay.
Targets were there to be had, but the conditions were really tough.
I'm assuming it'll knock down clays, some will lift up. It's just...
Exactly. You described it perfectly. Pushes them down. If they're going away from you, like a trap shot, that wind is going to push that target right down on top of the sage.
Gotcha.
Suppose he's got it angled up to a 45-degree angle. Well, good luck. That thing is now a Frisbee, and it's over in date.
Yeah. So what do you do in those situations? Do you try to shoot quicker?
That is a common thing that a lot of shooters say. Oh, you just need to jump on the birds sooner.
That's what I would assume. But
you want to catch them under power, and that's not a bad thing to do. That's not a bad strategy. In the wind, though, I have learned how to shoot better in the wind by applying 3 different hold points.
Okay.
So if I've got a left to right crosser and it's very windy, I'm going to hold my gun in my hold point at the lowest I think it'll ever get as far as the target goes.
Okay.
The middle hold point is going to be the sweet spot where you would normally see it without any tough situational weather. And then you hold real, you got to have also a third hold point, which is high, in case it's called ballooning. If the target balloons on you and it takes off and goes over to the Capitol, then you've got to have 3 different hold points in your mind as a strategy just to begin. You want to hold the lowest to get started. Okay, if it's going to go low, I'm already down here.
Right.
If it balloons on me, all I got to do is go up to the target, and I'm not going to get caught off guard. 3 different hole points that you need to think about.
Oh, man. And this is, you and I work together here at Evans Broadcast.
Yes.
So we occasionally chat in the hall about, I went out and shot or this, that, or the other thing. In talking with you, what I have come to realize is a lot of my shotgun woes can be traced back to, I don't think about anything.
Mm-hmm. How I'm holding the, and nothing, because I'm a hunter first. So for me, it's like, I don't know. I just lift my gun up and then I try to butt, body, beak, bang.
Yes.
That's my shot thought. And so talking with you over the years, I'm like, oh man, you've got all that going on in your head at every single station. Mm-hmm. And your scores reflected. A bad day for you was 72.
72.
That,
tough day.
I'd be writing home on that one. I'd be going, absolutely. So
yes. So it'll wear you out. It's mentally exhausting. Over 100 bird competition.
Yeah.
If you go home and you put your head back on the couch pillow and you find yourself about ready to fall asleep, you've had a good day on the course. Because it is exhausting. It's a lot of mental energy. And after you make your plan, break point, hold point, where you see the target the best, that's called the focal point, as it's coming out of the trap, you're doing that four pairs at a time, every single time. And so it does wear you down. It will wear you down.
Are you a chatty Cathy on the course or no?
I would say I am a attaboy, Henry. Attaboy, you know, clapping guy.
Okay.
So I'm the guy who's going to help my teammates out. If they have a poor station, I say something like, get it next time. You got it next time, Henry.
Okay. So, but you're not making small talk. You're thinking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Especially right. When I step in behind the shooter in front of me, who's now shooting in the stand, I'm not talking.
Oh, really?
I'm not looking around. I'm watching. I am watching every single pair he's shooting.
Okay.
So I am reconfirming my focal point, my hole point, and my break point.
Gotcha.
And so I am just saying, I'm going to see this target right here over this sagebrush. I'm going to break it looking in the distance. I'm going to break it over that rooftop because now I'm looking 400 yards away. This is where I'm going to look, and this is where I'm going to hold every time. And once I step into the stand, all I'm doing is clearing my mind and firing the plan.
Okay. So I've made the offer before, and I got to get out and shoot with you, but I'm afraid that I would annoy you because when we shoot, like my brother, my buddy Steve, Aaron, when we all shoot together, it's like when somebody steps up, it's, hey, don't suck this time. Hey, you know, the point is to actually hit the thing, right? Like, you know, there's banter and we're just having a good time. I've never shot with somebody who's, who's serious to the level you are, where it's like, okay, it's go time. Here's this, here's this, here's this. We're just kind of throwing shells and guns and cracking
jokes.
Like
that. Okay. That is so fun when you can go out with a group like that and you get hecklers.
Yeah, man,
that I have the best time. And I don't shy away from that. Guy says, let's go shoot. I go into it with, let's go have, this is a fun day today. This is fun.
Okay.
We're going to have fun. And there's nothing wrong with shooting with your buddies.
Okay. Yeah,
not a thing.
Good, good. Now, on the heels of that 72 you shot,
yes,
you shot one of your best scores, or how did you phrase it? You did very well one day.
I appreciate you bringing that up because it still makes me feel very proud inside as I speak to you a week later. When you shoot a main event on a state shoot, you have to shoot one specific main event on the morning flight,
okay,
which is 8 o'clock in the morning. And then you need to shoot one at about 11:30 or 3:30 in the afternoon. But you've got to shoot in the morning on one of those. And shooting at 8 o'clock in the morning where you've got to be focused has always been a challenge for me. So I've really worked hard on it, Henry. I once got some great advice from a shooter, and he said to me, this is a long time ago, Rick, when you shoot those 8 o'clock squads, you've got to get your body ready 4 hours in advance. You need to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I've never forgotten that advice, but it's only been recently that I have been really diligently going to bed early, setting my alarm for 4 in the morning, getting up, walking around, getting your blood circulating, having breakfast.
Do you have a specific routine, or is it just kind of like, okay, I'm up, I'm, you know, you're not going, are you going for a run or anything
I stick to the same routine. If I had a 10:30 start time,
okay,
everything is just earlier.
Gotcha.
So you got to force yourself to have that breakfast at 6:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning.
And what are you doing during that? Are you like reading the news of the day, or are you thinking about like each stand or what?
That thinking about each stand is done prior to the shoot, where you mentally rehearse it in your head.
Gotcha.
But the actual morning of, just going through the normal routine, reading the paper, reading the internet,
right,
watching ESPN, what's going on in sports world.
Who won this?
Yes.
Okay.
Just getting your mind going a little earlier.
And then what time do you show up at the course?
An hour early. So you want to get there. If you're shooting at 8, you want to get there at 7, 7:15. Another great piece of advice that somebody told me is when you get there, you want to put on the shooting glasses that you're going to be using for that morning sun, your midday sun. You want to put them on now, not right before you step on the dirt to go out and shoot, because your eyes have to adjust from sunglasses to shooting glasses. There's a difference.
And do you mind if I out you real quick on air? You don't drink caffeine.
I drink tea.
Oh, you do drink tea.
Treat.
Okay, okay. I've never seen you drink coffee at work.
No coffee.
And you're getting up at 4 a.m. to,
But instead
there's an easier way to do this, Rick. It's called coffee.
I used to. The thing is, I'll have two teas instead of one.
Okay.
So I'm getting up that early. And getting back to your question about the Saturday morning event,
right.
I shot my best score on an 8 a.m. flight that I ever have in my shooting career, which has been about 16 years. I started late.
Okay.
I shot a 90 at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's 90 out of 100 targets.
Yeah.
So I couldn't be happier with that.
That's insane to me.
At 8 o'clock in the morning, I know.
Yeah, 90 out of 100.
So I dropped 10.
Yeah. Hey, we are going to get into which 10 it was. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service, Rightful Liberty Arms, and Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Go see Michael over there at Rightful Liberty Arms. I believe there are still some Nevada Backcountry hats. Got to check in with him and make sure. With sponsor stuff out of the way, we're going to jump right back into the interview with Rick Carter. Rick, you get up 4 hours before the tournament. You have to shoot at 8. Proof is in the pudding. Mm-hmm. You shoot a 90.
Yeah.
Your best morning shoot ever.
Yeah. Mornings, the light is different.
Yeah.
The sun looks different at 8 in the morning, Henry, than it does at 12 in the afternoon.
Well, absolutely.
It's over your head versus behind you. And I'd also like to say that because we were starting on Station 3, I'm speaking about Capital City Gun Club. For those who are interested, Capital City Gun Club, it's a small course. And the sun comes up behind stations 2, 3, 4, 5, our backs were to the sun in the earliest part of the day. So the targets were glowing. I have to say that was also to my advantage, really. Yeah. Because
the sun
was behind
us. But what about when you make the turn by like 10, 11 as you're coming down that back there?
They call the corner, yes.
Yeah.
I heard more groaning about that because the guy who set the targets, he threw a 45-degree angled trap teal. They call it a trap teal. Picture that in your mind. Guys, it threw right through the sun.
Yeah.
I was so fortunate to come around when the sun was overhead, so I did not deal with that sunlight in my eyes.
Oh, okay, so you timed it. Gotcha.
And it's luck of the draw how they schedule you.
Right.
I just happened to start on Station 3, which is, as you know, the club well.
Yeah.
Your back is facing the east.
And that's an ideal target to shoot with that early first morning. I've shot that course, Rick, a couple different ways. I used to do those summer leagues down there. We'd rip down there and shoot it after work. And those 3, 2, 3, mm-hmm. that corner there sucked because you're looking right in the sun at that hour. So
Henry, I've gone to practice there and I have said, I'm not going to shoot these today.
Yep.
I don't need to shoot these targets that bad.
Yeah.
So I'll move around the course and have the sun behind me. By the way, I also want to mention those targets you said earlier, stations 11, 12, 13, 14.
Right.
When that sun is setting and they make those targets glow. Those are so fun.
Which one is it? There's that one that gets up about 30, 40 yards out and it goes high. It's on that corner. You've got the two that come over your head and then the one that comes up. What stand is that?
Two that come over your head followed by a trapped teal.
That's the trapped teal.
Is the same station. I believe that station, it could be station 11-ish.
Okay, we're going to get into a little bit of the course setting. I've done this before where I show up one day and I shoot really well and I think I'm going to go back a couple days later and they've got it set for a tournament coming up. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, clays are coming out faster, they're farther out.
Yes.
That trapped teal, had they moved that farther out or was it at about the same point?
They did not move the trap.
Okay.
All the setter did was adjust the spring. So one day it's stiff and or tight or wound up, they call it. And the next day, same situation, lower the trap teal angle a little and soften the spring a little. That's how he changed
it. Oh, so they're doing it in between days of shooting.
Saturday is one set of targets. Sunday, complete change.
Whoa.
Complete change. Now, the targets may be in the same neighborhood,
right?
But your angles are different and your springs are different.
Similar look, but different trajectory.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Man, I got to go do some. I think I told you. I shot that one with Aaron. I shot that one tournament down there with him, and everything was set for 12 gauge. Mm-hmm. And we shot 410s, and I just stunk up the place. It was terrible. But it was a one-day shoot. I can't imagine doing that and then coming back and it's something different. Just when you think you get a stand figured out.
Let's back it up one day.
Okay.
So the prelim is a 100-bird event, which is thrown on Friday. That's one set of targets. So he's moved his traps around, and he's adjusted his springs, and then Friday's prelim is changed completely for the actual main event. The main event on Saturday is a set of targets. Sunday, totally different targets.
Oh.
Man, you've got to get on your game quick because he changes the stuff up.
And this is that only for the state shoot, or do they? Is this a pretty typical tournament deal?
Typical for state shoots.
Okay.
That's how it's done. I'll be heading over to the California state shoot at Quail Point in June, and that's the way he does it as well.
Okay.
Prelims, that's one set of targets. Warm you up. And then Thursday's sub-gauge, just like Nevada.
Okay.
Friday and Saturday and Sunday, totally different targets.
All right, so we're both Nevada guys.
Yeah.
A little bias there. I'm assuming just based on the population and the rich history that shotgun sports enjoy in California, is the competition stiffer over there across the border?
Without, I want to respect my Nevada brothers. But because you've got a draw from Modesto and Sacramento and all those other Central Valley towns, these shooters come up, they'll drive the 3.5 hours to shoot a big tournament, such as Quail Point, which throws big tournaments over 3-4 days. Just a normal monthly shoot at a place like that will draw the best shooters from around the region. I have Nevada shooters that I respect that we will squat up together. We drive down there and shoot it. So yes, Nevada just doesn't have the amount of
population
of top-rated shooters who come out of the woodwork for those events.
Well, and I got to imagine, I mean, the nearest big population center would be, or outside of the Reno area, would be Las Vegas. And I can't imagine folks driving 9.5 hours to come.
Nope. Yeah. You will not see that.
Okay.
You will not see that. Your guys are coming from Reno. Mostly it's all Reno, very few Fallon.
Okay.
And there's also a smattering of Carson Valley Clays shooters
from
over in Gardnerville. Those guys will make the trek over, but if you have 100 shooters at a main event on a Saturday, maybe 15 to 20 of those might be Nevada shooters.
Gotcha. So,
and then the high-skill shooters are all those guys who just live down there and practice on those courses.
Right.
So, yes, to answer your question, it is a little tougher.
Okay, so where did 90 put you on that day as far as ranking?
I'm glad you asked it that way because when I was beginning my shooting career, I went to shoot to win. And I would HOA or high overall a tournament every once in a while, and I'd win some money, and I'd win some targets. They give away free targets, stuff like that, shells of ammo and stuff. And now I don't look at it that way. As I have gotten older, I shoot to be competitive in my concurrent. Concurrents in our sport are based on age groups.
Okay.
So I also am in the open event where I'm shooting against everybody.
Right.
But I go right to the veteran event, veteran concurrent, and I say, who else in my age group did I compete against?
Okay.
Ooh, he's a good shooter. Gosh, I beat him by one. Hey, now I look at it as, how did I do top three? I want to shoot top three. So if I go veteran and I'm number one in that concurrent, I have had a great day. If I'm number two or number three, I'm still walking away head held high.
Okay, where'd you walk away after the 90?
37 shooters in my concurrent.
Okay.
I was fifth in the main and sixth in the prelim.
Okay.
So my son, who put it, because you go home and you wallow and you think
you really, about, you wallowed after that a little bit.
Think about how you, God, I left those singles out there. I should have been higher. And you think, you don't think about the 90 for more than about an hour. And then you think, oh, I left 10 single targets out there. I could have shot a 97 at least. And so my son put it in perspective. He goes, Dad, that's top five.
Yeah.
37 shooters just like you at your age group shot. You shot better than
32 of them.
So right? Isn't it? It's up to kids. You know, he's 21. Yeah. He's put it in perspective. Come on, Dad. Be happy.
But that really, you did think about that afterwards. Yeah. You were in your head like, oh, fifth is, oh.
I should have had a third at least. Yeah, you start thinking about it.
Where'd the other guys, what did they shoot? What was like the high score?
Well, the high score overall for the Nevada State shoot was a 96 on one day and a 94 on the other.
God, that is lights out.
Lights out. Holy young smokes. Kid, probably 28, 29, and you know, my eyes don't compete with those eyes. That's how we say it.
That's a great point, yeah.
His reaction time and his eyes at 26, 28 years old. Boy, you know, I'm a dad of two sons and they're 21. So I work twice as hard just to get up into that concurrent of first, second, or third.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so he dropped about 10 targets, you know, and you think that he earned it. That
Good
is awesome.
Lord.
That is awesome.
Well, I hate to pick at your emotional scars after placing fifth, Rick, but we are going to take a break, and I still haven't gotten to a chunk of the questions I wanted to ask, so I'm going to make you late for something. I'm going to keep you on air for a little while longer. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. In studio with me right now is Rick Carter. Rick, we just got done talking about taking fifth, kind of hanging your head and going, ah. Now, that was in your, say it one more time, concurrent?
Concurrent.
Okay. In sporting clays, it's what now? What's the age bracket? You're a veteran, I think you said?
I just aged into the super vet category. So okay. It's based on ages. So you have the open category. That's where that 28-year-old kid won.
Right.
He's competing against everybody. And then they have the ladies, the juniors, the sub-juniors, all based on age. And then you have the veterans, which I believe is 55 to 65.
Okay.
Then you go up to the super vets, and then you go to the legacy, and these guys who are just, you know, in their 80s, still plugging away. God love them.
So what is, super vet would be 65, 75?
About 73, 65 to 73. 73.
Oh, okay, so it's not just an even 10-year
deal. I thought
deal.
It was. I looked it up. Yeah, it's about 73.
But one of my big gripes about archery tournaments is the adult class is 18 to 49.
Wow, so you're competing against 19-year-old kids.
You're competing against some of these 20-year-old kids, and you made the point, 20-year-old eyes and everything. I don't know anybody on the planet that thinks that at 48 or 9, you can hang with a 23 or 24-year-old. I mean, the course doesn't wear them down as much. They see much better. The whole nine yards. So I don't know if that's similar, like if the, what was the class below veteran?
That's called the open category.
Open. That ends at?
55.
55. So it is similar, I suppose. Yeah, 18 to 55, basically.
Yeah,
even
it is.
Even a little hard. Oh, okay.
And those men in that category, they've been shooting a long time, and they are good shots. And you maintain that skill level of a long time as long as you keep practicing at it, and you acquire all that knowledge. So it's, I've seen men at the Nationals that have been in their 50s who have won.
In the open.
In the open category. And it just made us, all of us old guys, raise our hands in victory.
You're rooting from the sidelines. Yeah.
It can be done. It can be done, Henry.
All right. Yeah. I just, that's that experience. versus youth and which, okay. I still have not got to, you mentioned glasses earlier, and I wanted to get into some of the gear stuff.
Rick. Sure, nuts and bolts, you
bet. Yeah, go through what you are shooting at these events, your gun and gun setup.
What's in your bag kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
When I first got into the game, I started with a Benelli Super Sport, which is a single barrel shotgun, and I was just trying to learn the game. After that, I segued into double barrels, over-unders, and I like the weight. I like the balance of those over-unders. So I stayed with that for a while, and I shot a Beretta.
Okay.
And I then moved on to a Browning, and I shot that for a little while. And they say when you're beginning, sometimes you need to go through a handful of guns just to find the one that fits you best and works with you. And several years ago, I settled on a gun called a Krieghoff. Trap shooters would know that gun a lot. A lot of trap shooters shoot that gun, and it's extremely popular in sporting clays as well. A different setup with the ribs and things.
Right.
But I shoot a Krieghoff. It's called a K80, 32-inch barrels, 12-gauge, and it's a flat rib. I prefer a flat rib instead of a mid-rib or a high rib.
Yeah, okay.
I just like a flat rib myself. And it's a choked gun, so I can insert choke tubes as I see fit, although I really have come to the conclusion that down at sea level, that Krieghoff with 1 ounce, it's called a 1 ounce load, I will shoot modified chokes and rarely change them down at sea level. And up here, I have discovered over time that I actually shoot better with an improved cylinder choke.
Okay.
I open up for this altitude, 4,700 feet, and I open up the choke just based on the air density up here. It's just not the same as it is down there. So best shooters better than me, said, you know, Rick, that Krieghoff and 1 ounce loads, you might want to consider opening up. Rubbish. I like those smoke balls hanging
exactly.
in the air.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you know, a break's a break. An X is an X. And I started thinking, man, these guys might be right. So I started shooting tournaments. I bit the bullet up here now. And I used improved cylinders, a couple of 10s, they call it. 10s is the constriction. So rarely changed. I shot a 90 at the state shoot with two improved cylinder chokes.
And you, okay, so that was going to, you led me to my next question.
Yes, sir.
You stick IC in both barrels.
Yes, IC.
And just let it ride.
Let it go and don't think twice about it.
You're not one of these guys spinning them out at, oh, this is a longer bird. This is a da-da-da, changing chokes.
The only time I will do that is on a real close rabbit. If I've got a rabbit, usually down at sea level, it's 15 yards in front of me, I am not going to handicap myself with a pattern the size of a softball.
Right.
So I will pull those out, and I will put a skeet choke in, something nice and wide at that distance. So, yes, I will open up on specific targets, but as far as distance goes, it's just modified and let it eat.
So all the hand-wringing people do over the choke thing, at the end of the day, unless you're talking about, I don't know, national level, international level, where you're, you know, a 98 and a 99, or I'm assuming people shoot perfect scores. Yeah, okay. So unless you're talking about stuff like that, just throw some chokes in and go shoot.
Just, I hate it when I see shooters. Not that I dislike it, but I wish the shooter would spend more time planning the shot in the stand than, I want to say this properly, futzing over chokes. Yes, if they were to dedicate their time planning versus twisting, they'd shoot so much better, and they'd have so much more fun, less mental energy.
Now, what chokes do you use?
It's a brand called Extreme. They're made in California. They're a California company, and the owner is a Krieghoff shooter at heart.
Okay.
And so he originally designed his chokes for himself because he wanted good chokes to come out of that Krieghoff with a 732 bore. So the bore of the gun is 732. He made chokes just for those Krieghoffs, and they became so popular. Now he offers them to everything. Those chokes, I don't even think about them. I just stick those mods in down in the
down
quail point, and I stick those ICs on in the gun up here and just let it go. And even at Walker River, which that guy will throw some stuff off the top of those mountains. It's pretty far away.
Yeah.
And I just let the ICs go, and I'm surprised that they break them as hard as they do.
Now, it's funny. Would you say, like, what do I have in my gun? I think I got some Briley's in there.
Briley's great chokes. Started with those.
Oh, they are good chokes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
Started with those. Love them.
That's what I was going to ask. Do guys at your level kind of look down on like the... No. Okay.
No, not at all. Briley's it's a world-famous company. They've been around for decades, and they make some of the best tubes you'll ever shoot. They are fantastic.
Okay.
I just happen to like the look of the extremes, and I...
they went with it.
And I went with them, yeah. But hey, I shot Briley's for a long time.
I'll give a quick free plug to Briley, in fact. They screwed up twice on a recent order getting for that Beretta 28 gauge.
Yes.
686 I've got.
Yeah, it's a cool gun.
They sent me the wrong thread pitch the first time. Then they sent me a 20 gauge instead of a 28. I had to call. They were absolutely phenomenal as a company to deal with. I called them. I said, hey, I think it was the same guy, Rob or something, you know, answers the phone. Briley, this is Rob. I said, hey, you're going to hate me. It's Henry Evans from Reno, Nevada again. You guys sent me 20 gauge chokes. It's the right thread. It's a 20 gauge. I need a 20. And he goes, oh, not again. And I said, hey, look, do you want me to mail these? What do you want me to do with these? I have no use for. And he said, look, hang on to them. I don't want you to send anything back until we get you the right chokes. So finally, third time was the charm. They sent them, and they sent a prepaid send us back the other screw ups. Phenomenal company.
Customer service.
Yeah, they were awesome.
I will say there's one thing about Briley quickly is they make, hands down, the best sub gauge tube sets in the market. So if you have a 12 gauge and you want to shoot 20, you buy those pipes and those will go right in. They're the best. There's no question.
I'm going to bleep that entire thing you just said, Rick, because my wife is convinced I need a new gun for a different gauge. We're not going to put that out there that all I ever needed was a 12 and I could buy tubes for it.
That's right.
Yeah, I need a new gun every time, Cynthia. So anyway, you're shooting a Krieghoff, Extreme Chokes,
Extreme
Shell stuff. There's consumables in shotgun sports.
Yes.
And that would be the shells. What are you shooting there?
It's funny. I've come to realize what my Krieghoff likes and what it does not like. So I have found that this new load from Federal called Federal Masterclass is fantastic. Pattern's great. Hits hard. I sound like a commercial for them, but I discovered them at Shields, and I absolutely love them. Love them. And my second choice is a brand called Fiocchi and a load they called the Little Rhino. Both 1 ounce loads, both 1,250 feet per second, both 7.5 shot.
Okay.
And I just don't even think about it.
When you said, 0.732, that's slightly overboard for a 12 gauge, isn't it?
It is just a touch.
Yeah, a standard 12 gauge is 0.725, I think.
Yeah, you're correct. Yeah, a little bit lower than 730.
Okay.
So 732 is a little bit larger bore, and Browning's, I believe, is a little bit bigger than that.
We have got to go to a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. And man, I had another guest coming in, and then Rick and I just got rolling. So I'm going to save Aaron for a future episode. And for right now, Rick, let's go ahead. I want to talk a little bit more about shells.
Okay.
And I want to pick your brain on, do you think the components matter, and do you reload?
I do not reload. I used to reload center fire when I used to shoot 270s, and that was very relaxing and therapeutic.
Gotcha.
I do not reload shotgun shells because, although, yes, you can save a few bucks, but in the long run, factory ammo now has caught up in price with reload stuff. It's not always the case, but if a box of shells costs $10, you might be able to reload the same box for $7.50 or $8.
Right.
So it's, you say, how much is that worth it to me to give up all that time? There are men and women who use it as their time, and it's therapeutic, and it's get away from the wife, and let's just focus. I'm out in the shed. I respect those guys, and they make some sweet loads. They do.
Yeah.
They make custom-made loads. Nothing falls out of the crimp, and it's dialed in for their gun. Respect to those guys.
But that's not you.
I do not reload.
Yeah, you said, what's your time worth? I use it. I reload because I choose to shoot a 28 gauge.
There you go.
And so there still is that margin of cost on sub-gauge stuff where it's like, okay, this makes sense for me to reload. And I'll give a perfect example. I started fooling around with tungsten stuff for hunting, turkeys and waterfowl. I'm going to say a number here, folks. And again, this is it sounds ridiculous when I say it out loud. Cynthia, go ahead, turn the radio off right now. If I walk into Cabela's or Scheels, I'm paying about $10 every time I pull the trigger with those tungsten loads, the factory ones you can buy.
Yeah.
At home, every time I pull the trigger with my tungsten reloads, I'm looking at about $5.50 to $6.
That's so worth it. That's worth it.
Now, it's still, again, I have not gone down the road. I don't shoot well enough to use them for waterfowl because that can be a spendy day real quick. But for turkeys, where it's usually one and done, it's like, okay, here's a $5 bill I'm blowing, but got to use non-toxic. Anyway, I digress. I got off on that. So you don't reload. You shoot an ounce. Why did I think most people shot an ounce and an eighth for 12-gauge?
Availability. The shooter who goes to an ounce and an eighth, they're usually getting most of their stuff. It's the promotional loads at Sportsman's Warehouse.
Okay.
For $8.99. It's the promotional load at Scheels, their own brand called Target Max, for $8.95. And the majority that they get in bulk is ounce and an eighth.
That's what I always see, yeah.
Ounce and an eighth, yes. That seems to be the big shipments they get. And I don't shoot ounce and an eighth. I've always shot 1 ounce loads because it patterns better out of my gun.
Answer my next question, which was going to be, if I'm looking to pick up a couple extra clays, I'm thinking, hey, an extra eighth of an ounce buys me a little bit of insurance, maybe a little longer bird, whatever. But you've done the research on your own gun and spent enough time at the patterning board to nah, it's just not worth it for me.
That's right. So a 1 ounce load is going to pattern better out of my gun than a 1 1/8 load. You know, with the ounce and an eighth load, you've got those flyers, those little pellets that'll get crushed as they're leaving the barrel, and those flyers will go left and right. And boy, if I was shooting trap, yes, I would stand there at that 27-yard line with a full choke and an ounce and an eighth load.
Right.
I'd want every advantage I could get.
Right.
But in sporting clays, those targets are slightly different, showing a lot more belly, a lot more dome. And I prefer the 1 ounce loads, as do many of the other shooters I shoot with. And in international games, such as FITASC, which is that's a set of five initials that I won't even explain. That's my favorite game. It's called a low gun game.
Okay.
You have to mount from the low gun below your armpit. Those are all mandatory 1 ounce loads, and they check you. They check you. Let me see your pockets. And you got to pull out a shell to the ref.
Yeah.
And show them, I'm shooting a 1 ounce load.
So what, are you not allowed to shoot reloads then?
In a casual shoot, like coming up the Cal State warm-up shoot, and they have a FITASC event, they look the other way. But in a registered event, you are not supposed to shoot reloads in FITASC.
No kidding.
Correct.
Okay. How? I mean, I suppose, this is just me, mischievous personality. I go, how do they know guys aren't just fudging? Do they cut open a shell or something? Or they don't take it that seriously.
Not on a casual shoot.
Gotcha.
I just shot a Cal State warm-up shoot down at Quail Point in April, and they wanted to make sure the refs were doing everything they need to do, because you have full-blown certified referees for the game of FITASC. They wanted you to make sure that your FITASC line was correctly drawn on your vest.
That the gun butt has to be below.
They measured. They measured. They went through your pockets. They didn't grab them, but they'd say, let me see a handful of shells. And you'd turn it over and it'd say, federal, 1 ounce, estate, 1 ounce. Thank you. That's all I need to see. So they were practicing for the big shoot, which is coming up in 2 or 3 weeks.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay. Yeah. You like a 1 ounce shell. Now say the names of the shell, because one of them, what'd you say, a Little Rhino or something?
Yeah, Fiocchi makes a shell called Little Rhino. And if you look at the box, it says it right on it, Little Rhino. It's a 1 ounce load, 1,250 feet per second, 7.5 shot.
Okay.
That's the load called Little Rhino. And it just works fabulously in FITASC. And because I love FITASC so much that I don't change the shell load just for sporting clays. I know my 1 ounce shot will break a 60-yard chandelle in FITASC as easily as it will a 50-yard rabbit in sporting clays.
Hmm.
So I just leave it as is. I don't shoot 1 ounce eighths at anything except 1 ounce. It's all 1 ounce.
Where do you find, I got to assume that's like an online deal or something. Where do you find those?
I scour the internet, a place called Abel's Ammo.
Yeah, I get the emails.
Yes, Abel's. You can get an email and it'll say free shipping on anything over 200. You buy two or three flats.
Yeah.
And there's your free shipping.
Is that stuff fairly spendy compared to like the budget packs at Scheels and stuff, or no?
They can't compete with the budget stuff at Scheels.
Right.
They have a Scheels load that Fiocchi makes just for Scheels called Target Max.
Yeah.
Man, I buy that stuff like candy because it is cheap and it's good load. It's okay. A great practice load.
Yeah.
Great practice load.
I got a bunch of that stuff at home, that Target Max.
Target Max.
Unfortunately, only for 12 and 20, though.
Yeah.
28, I'm hand loading. Yeah. Because you're buying, a flat of Winchester AA will run you, I think it's like $130 now.
Yeah, exactly.
For 28 gauge. So
another great load. Winchester AA's.
Okay.
I've shot those many times, but I gravitated towards the Federal Masterclass they just came out with.
That's the other one. Federal Masterclass, you said.
It's made by Federal, and
It's
called Masterclass. And the components, Henry, are just a step above their Federal Top Gun load.
Familiar with that.
The wad is different. The actual lead has more antimony in it.
Right.
Makes it harder than lead. And so the actual shell casing is different in construction. Winchester AA is a great reference. That's a solid, smooth piece of plastic.
Yep.
And they're great.
This is going to make me sound really... It has nothing to do with pattern or anything. I get more reloads per shell out of the Winchester AA.
My friend does too. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I bought those. And now reloading, it's like, okay, I know I can get 5 or 6, if I'm gentle with them, reloads out of every Winchester versus Fiocchi. Mm. Even like I ordered some Chetite holes. They all seem to fall apart after a couple.
Yes.
So whatever Winchester's doing with that plastic, I love it because I can reload them twice as many times.
Solid as a rock. I agree. I have so many buddies who shoot and they will look down after they get done with a station. They'll look down and go, I'm not going to let that go.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll pick up guys who just toss those AA shells away.
Yeah.
Not this dude. It's like finding gold.
Mm-hmm. Somebody at Station 15 dumped a bunch of Winchester AA 28 gauge in the trash.
Oh, forget it.
I was like a raccoon. I was climbing, half hanging in the thing, picking out shells going, oh, buddy, this is all. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a heyday for them.
Well, hey, Rick, sincere thank you to you for doing this. Man, you bailed me out. Dave is back east. I got an archery tournament to shoot this weekend. So congratulations on your 90, and thank you for doing this.
I appreciate it. Loved being here. Thanks, Henry.